Welcome to the Marshaverse. This is a place in the rest of the universe where I come to make shit make sense.
From the entertainment capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, it's Midnight in the Marshaverse, starring Marsha Warfield and her two sons, Stephen Roberts and Skills Hudson, as the problem child.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Midnight in the Marshaverse. Yay! Midnight in the Marshaverse. That's a whole different song. That's not my song. I just feel like, you know, I just feel like fucking shit up right now. But we're not going to do that. We're going to have a nice little get together. I am so excited about my guest this week, this young man I've known for a long time. We haven't seen each other in way too many years to count. So this is going to be a kind of a reunion and a walk down memory lane. And you know him. You can't help but know him. And his name is Christopher Titus. He'll be joining me in a minute. So get ready for that. But like every week, we welcome you here at the We welcome you here at the Witching Hour. You know, that time between yesterday and tomorrow. And right now is still today, but it's a magic time where anything is possible. So I want you to relax, settle down. We have all had a pretty hectic week. So the purpose of this whole show is to take a breath, you know, relax from the hectic schedules that we are supposed to live by. You get up in the morning, you take your brush, take coffee, get the bus, get the kids, blah, 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 blah. 20 minutes for lunch while you're doing on the phone and making, you know, and we're so wired that we don't take time to relax. So this is our time to relax. And I like to relax with a little cognac and a little cannabis because where I live is legal. And so that's what I like to do once a week. We have this little session and we do that. This week, instead of just a straight cognac, we're going to do American cognac, which is Applejack. You know, when the country was founded, apples were plentiful and water was fucked up. And so they drank Applejack. So we're going to have some apple brandy. It's layered right here. And I'm going to pour it into some hot apple juice. Not too much, because we just want to take the edge off. We don't want to lose our minds. And I'm going to take a little sip out of my Sherry Shepherd cup. You know, when you do, you see, I like to wear things that people give me. This is special because Night Court was canceled the second time. I swear it wasn't my fault. But it was a wonderful run while it lasted twice. You know, in this career I've had, I've been able to climb mountains that most people don't even get to twice. You know, I retired for a while, came back, and do it all over again. And Night Court is another chapter in that book. So I will miss all the people that I've grown to know and love and work with, but I will cherish the experience and the friendships and you know, the fans and everything about it. So that's my Night Court shirt, Sherry Shepherd shirt, cup, Applejack, all American. Woo! This is a vape pen. I don't know what kind of there's a church battery. Oh, it's a heavy hitters cart. I don't know what kind, but we'll find out. You know, if it wasn't for weed, there would be no comedy. I'm just putting that out there, telling you a little truth. If anywhere there's comedians, there's going to be weed. Been that way since the day I started in the business. Now we get to the segment that we like to call comediosophy, where you have one comedian's philosophy on comedy, life, America, everything. And this week, I wanted to start with code switching. We look at code switching like we look at most things from one point of view. We look at it as Black people code switch to get along with white people. But white people code switch to influence everything. And so American history has been code switched into white speak. And as an example, I did a series called White People We Need to Talk on TikTok a while ago. And one of the first videos I did was a two-parter, and it was about cakewalks. So I think we're going to roll that right now and let you see what I'm talking about. White people, we need to talk. Today's topic is dancing, cakewalks, part two. When last we met, we learned that white people were so delighted watching people they considered no better than pets and pack animals mock them that they began to demand that they be performed at all of their celebrations. Took all the fun out the thing. And not everybody was in on the joke. Like the New York song and dance man who discovered these jingles and ditties and cakewalks on his tour through the South and loved them so much, he took them with him when he went back home. He blackened his face, put on old clothes, changed a couple of lines, and began to perform these songs as his own. Folks up north loved his authentic presentations of Negro life, and soon he was traveling all over the world. He was Thomas Daddy Rice, father of American minstrelsy. White people, we need to talk. Today's topic, dancing. No, I'm not going to make fun of you, even though it is a time-honored American tradition. From the earliest days, enslaved Africans thought the hoity-toity rituals of European dance was the funniest shit they had ever seen. So whenever they had the chance, they would mock them. They'd dress up, as it were, and compete for small prizes, often baked goods. The winner would literally take the cake. Later, when white men in grotesquely exaggerated reverse clown makeup laid the foundation for modern American show business with blackface minstrelsy, cakewalks were a big part. Okay, so now you get the idea of what I mean. Cakewalks were, and still are popular in various ways. They show up in line dances, and they were a big part of Soul Train, and they've been modified. But the whole idea of a line of people competing to show up each other is still pretty popular. The political part is not there, where Black people start making fun of white people and white people think it's clever because, you know, if your pets were doing little dances, you would think it was clever too. So they invested in it and made bigger cakes and pies, and it became a staple of minstrelsy, which is the foundation of American show business. I bring that up because right now online, I find when I have my conversations with people that Black people and white people speak two different languages. And so what they hear is not always what you say, and vice versa. So when we have these dialogues, they're automatically opposed. You can't find common ground when you're not speaking the same language. And so when Black people say, we need to have reforms because in this country, we've been subject to white people's oppression and blah, blah, blah. White people hear, you hate all of us. You hate every white person in the world. And so we hate you back. You can't have a conversation when that's where you're starting from. And that's where we start from, not just in personal conversations with each other, in our knowledge of history. White people learn a different history than we do. We learn the same basic history officially in schools and stuff, but we learn another history on our own. We learn different stuff. White people don't learn that. They learn a different history. So for an example, white people have learned that Black people commit all the crimes, which to us is insane when the president is a criminal. What do you mean we commit all the crime? White people keep all the records. That's why Black people commit all the crimes. White people commit all the school shootings. Okay, you can point to a school shooting that wasn't done by a white person, and I can give you 900 that were. So until we start speaking the same language and realizing that the difference in our languages is purposeful, it's deliberate, it's meant to keep us not agreeing, not speaking the same language. So when you say DEI, you're saying Black people, and I'm saying, hey, me too. It's just we're always going to be at loggerheads. So we have to start realizing how these things have been set up. But that's all part of the DEI, of the CRT, which is not CRT, it's just history. But because we don't speak the same languages, we don't get the same lessons or the same impressions from the common lessons that we have. One of the biggest ones, and it comes up in politics too, one of the biggest ones that really bothers me is American. And again, not all white people. I did that video last week. Not all white people. But somehow America only belongs to white people. It belongs to white people whose families immigrated long after my family was here. And so the title of America has been American has been withheld from us since we've been here, even though we've been here since y'all been here. So when I say I'm an American, some people get shocked. Like, yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. I mean, it's like it doesn't compute because we've been taught that an American looks a certain way and moves a certain way and behaves a certain way and is American. But that denies the reality. So we have a whole history set up of denial of reality. And you can look around and see that Americans are all kinds of people. They speak all kinds of languages. They come from all kinds of places. And that's the beauty and the hope of this experiment, this American experiment, that all of these different influences can come together voluntarily and make magic, make something that's never been done before. We squandered that opportunity for competition, you know, see who's the big man, the top dog, whatever. And in the pyramid of just extremes, you know, in this country, we have, and it's not a pyramid, it's more of a rhombus, we have white men, white supremacy, white patriarchy, white men at the top, and you have white women and Black men. And then you have Black women. You see, Black men have something in common with white men. They're men. So they, when you learn the patriarchal system in this country, then that identifies them automatically with the same people who are oppressing them. White women are white. And so they have that common bond, that common experience. And so they get grace, even though we still are supposed to go, oh, hail mighty to the mighty white supremacists. Black women have no illusions about none of y'all because we have nothing in common with them. We've always been the ones who have held that truth that I'm not buying it. You can't tell me that. And that's a quality that in the Black community, we're taught to see it as negative. She's the negative, sassy, bossy, but everybody is. But that's such a power and a strength to be able to have seen all of this stuff happen from the position and of a woman who sees the world differently than men do. And that's why I support or and have lived decided to live in the Marshallverse, because I don't think like the people who run this country. I think different. I think, you know, you talk about politics and everything and what motivates people and all this. In the last election, we voted for the difference between a cultured English garden and a field of wildflower. We chose the clipped and precise English garden instead of the, hey, we got stuff growing everywhere. And look at all these colors. Look at all these people. It's so vibrant. It's so normal. And so Kamala Harris, when you talk about the mommy party, the daddy party, Kamala Harris represented the feminine ascension. It's to start thinking different, to start thinking familiarly and not adversarially. Start thinking of the world, of this country, of each other as community, as the United States of America, and all Americans with their vast differences, you know, as trees and flowers and colors and stuff, is something to be celebrated and realize how lucky you are to have that opportunity. And on top of the most amazing intellect and ingenuity, in the, human beings can do anything. They can change nature, but nature has a way of prevailing. And sometimes you might think you're outsmarting nature and whatever, and you're greed and what. And I say, if you really think you can conquer nature, find me a dinosaur. Nature will prevail. But we can cooperate with it, or we can continue to fight the world. And when we have a patriarchal mindset, we think combatively, we think competitively, everything as it comes. When the ESPN and all those networks started coming on, they started having, everything was a sport. Paperclip and chains. Brandi Washington has made the longest paperclip chain in the history. See, what the fuck? We make everything a competition from birth instead of making everything a cooperation. In fact, when we try to do the cooperation thing with kids, it takes a while to sink in, because they don't see that. They don't see. They see their parents competing. They see television. So we have to be careful about, you know, what we're looking for, what is really going on beyond all of the machinations that make people fight and all that. Do you want a world where people learn how to maximize the resources this system, Mother Nature has given us everything we need for every one of us. Are we going to try that, you know, cooperate to get that? Or are we going to fight over who gets to have this much, this, and who decides who lives and dies? You know, you get kind of deep sometimes when you take a good hit. Anyway, that's my comediosophy. I wanted to say something else, though. We lost Sly Stone a couple of days, yesterday now. But we also lost a young man named Wayne Lewis from Atlantic Star. And I wrote a piece on my Facebook page about how that affects me and how it affected me as a young person coming up in the 50s, 60s, 70s. I turned 21 in 1975. So coming up through all those times, we didn't have a lot of black female role models. And we had very few who embodied aspirational visions. You know, we did not see ourselves making it in show business. That's why I decided when I first got in the business, because what I grew up with, every black woman on TV was either a maid or a whore. In TV, movies, books, everyone. And I refused to do that. And so I didn't see myself as a teenager going, oh, I want to be like her. I want to be, you know, couldn't sing, dance, none of that. And my choices were few, you know. I could either be a teacher, a nurse, or civil rights activist. It wasn't a lot of options. And even after I got into business and started doing well, it wasn't until 1985 when the Atlantic Star came out with a song called Silver Shadow. And in that song, I saw my dreams. I love that song to this day. And so losing an artist who can take you, elevate you to another place, to the place where your dreams, where your soul, where your heart is, and give you that, whatever that is, it's such a gift and such, and I don't know that we tap into that upper level of feeling all that often. But I don't know that I can explain exactly what I mean, but that's okay, because what I mean really can't be said in English, code switch or not. It's just, you got to feel that, or it didn't communicate. So I want to say rest in peace to all, to both talents, legend, amazing. You can take 8 notes and a few instruments and make music. And so I always wonder, you know, people can make music. That's so amazing. And I wonder if birds, you know, birds don't practice, or do they? And I wondered if they practice, and maybe one of the birds is off key, and do they all stop and go, man, shut up. Don't tweet. If we warbling, you tweet, you throwing everybody off. You just lip beat. Don't just fake it. You suck. My mind goes these places. Anyway, thank you for listening to this part of the show. Now let's get to the good stuff. This young man has made a career for himself that I never could have imagined when I met him, because he was in high school, junior high, some crap like that. He's a kid. He wasn't supposed to be there. He wasn't supposed to be where I was, but he was. And then he picked up that comedy ball, not just the comedy, but the comedy heart. See, every comedian don't have the comedy heart. Some have the comedy mind. So he picked up the comedy heart and has made a wonderful career for himself. I'm so happy he's here. Ladies and gentlemen, say hello to Christopher Titus.
Hey, kid. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you, huh?
Could I just tell you, that was like amazing. I just the way you speak, the way, like, I keep waiting for a smart, kick-ass Marshall Warfield, and that was beautiful. That was really, it was really great. And you're right. We were at a place right now where, and by the way, I'm glad after talking like that, you had literally the whitest human being you could possibly bring on the show. I found out that my family's been here 400 years. We were here from 1635, came over on the Hopewell, and we've been here 400 years, and we own nothing, absolutely nothing. Like, we were here when you could just pick up gold from the streets, and I guess the Tituses were like, I got a bottle of wine, and these native people are sexy. It was interesting how, when you put it the way you put it, and Black women are, you know, my wife talks about this all the time, the toughest people, the baddest ass people on the planet are Black women. Because, and it's, I've never heard it kind of put the way you structured the patriarchy, but wow. Yeah. It's interesting. What I don't understand is racists. Here's the thing with racists. Here's their plan. All right. Here's the plan. We're not going to teach or tell anybody what happened. End of meeting. Like, that's the whole plan. Is that your whole concept of a plan? You think Black people are going to forget 400 years, but, yeah. So, you know, you were one of my inspirations for comedy, you know.
Oh, come on.
I was in the audience.
San Francisco, right? You were in San Francisco?
I was 14 years old. I wanted to do comedy since I was 5. I used to go sleep with some Bill Cosby records. My dad had a girl that he used to date. Her boyfriend was in the San Francisco comedy competition in 79. So I got to see him in the preliminaries. He got kicked out. Then I watched the semis, and then I got invited to go see the finals. And it was the last night, and the lineup is crazy. It's A. Whitney Brown, Michael Davis, Michael Winslow, Dana Carvey, and you. And here's what I love about you. Everybody else had voices. Whitney was juggling and doing other stuff. Michael Davis was juggling. Michael Winslow was doing noises. And you got up and you just flat out did straight up monologist and blew the, excuse my language, fucking roof off and won. And I'll never forget, listen, man, here's what I love about comedy. Everything happens. The hypnotists happen. The guitarists happen. The YouTube people happen, but the people that last all the way back to Mark Twain are the monologists, people that can just take their thoughts and like you just did and lay it out. I love that.
Well, that's what art does, all art. And we've lost the appreciation for this art as an art form. It's been, yes. I call it comedy. You know, you get them in, you tell them jokes, you get them out. You sell them drinks, you come up in and bring in a whole new people. Yep. We got 40 comics and 20 minutes. Go, you know. And so I'll have a few McJokes, a giggle, a tee-hee, and a ha-ha. And nobody says.
You might as well put in a drive-thru lane. You're absolutely right.
Nobody says anything that would jeopardize their two-minute spot.
Yeah,
everybody is so protected because they've gotten so get out of moving, man. And there are very few monologists who are thoughtful. Well, there are some, but they get lost in the shuffle. They get lost in the noise of the drive-through comedy.
Yeah, well, my new one's called Doomed to Repeat, and I talk about my family being here 400 years, and I go through it, and I do a bit on immigration, and I just. Robin and Carlin are my favorites, you know, and Carlin, I love when Richard got real deep and that's what we're supposed to do. Will Rogers, Mort Saul, Lenny Bruce, Bill Hicks, you should never back off. And if anything, I always say this, if I don't walk two people a show, I really didn't write hard enough.
You know, all you need is about 75% of the audience to like you.
And yeah.
25% of them to love you. You've had a great fucking show.
Amen.
A great show. So, you know, and it's not always about the laughs. You know?
True.
Most we comics today and comedians don't get a chance to manipulate the silence. To learn how to maneuver in the silence. They bombast and they hit, but the moments that leave people to remember you happen in the silence.
Yeah.
That's what we have to try to communicate. But it's so hard to be honest nowadays in this environment we're in. It's really hard to be honest enough to tell people the truth. Wow. They don't want to hear it. They've been taught over and over again that this is what this is. And they're taught it in 10-second intervals. Yeah. Got a headache? Take a pill. Got a dinner? Go here. Get a house. Got a pimple? It's probably cancer. I mean,
damn you, WebMD.
Oh, yeah, got to go look that up. Yeah, you probably get that. I mean, it's insane. And we never, ever slow down and chill and appreciate all of the things that have happened that most of us wish for. Yeah. Baby, you're there. Yeah. Let's all just stop the bullshit. I wrote today, I said, America, the United States is a rainbow coalition. The government is a clavern.
Once we could, you know, man, it was funny to me today. Problem. Yeah, today the biggest loser that we've ever had as president is renaming army bases after the Confederacy and the Confederate, after the biggest losers in history. We've lost our minds, man.
Yeah.
And then we got another dude, the richest guy in the world, throwing up Hitler high fives. Like, you know, man, listen, Marshall, you know how rich you have to be to just being able to zig Heil in 2025? Like, I made some money. I did okay in my life. But at my best, I didn't even have Jews Will Not Replace Us money.
Okay. I missed the We Shall Overcome. So,
but I love it. There's a bit I'm doing my new show where I it's called the fifth generation problem. And I think it's humanity problem. By the fifth generation, if you don't pass the stories down, you forget about the humanity's douchebaggery. You forget about our inherent human assholiness, and we'll do the same thing again. And there's a moment where you said about the silence where I talk about how I get to the talking about kids and how and then war just became a show on the History Channel, and then I had kids and they play war on their computers every night, but it's a fun war. And if they get killed, they just hit reset, and then their mom goes, hey, go, it's too violent, go do something else. And they go see John Wick, and they see 10,000 people die in 2 hours. Yep. And there's no bodies, and there's no consequences, and there's no funerals, because after five generations of plenty of food, free Wi-Fi, hot showers, and 16 flavors of Doritos, death isn't real, and everybody gets a trophy. And I let it just sit. And it's weird because it's a funny, funny bit. I think, you know, you said about silence. So many comics have forgotten this. But if you've done 45 minutes of kick-ass comedy, you can buy 3 minutes of punching him in the heart. You can punch him in the heart. And then you got to get out of it. You can't leave him there. But you can punch him in the heart. And I think that is something that so many guys have lost. You know,
that's
or never
Pryor did. Pryor manipulated the silence.
Yes.
Very, very well. Yeah. And all the greats, you know,
Red Button.
Newhart made a whole career.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
You know,
is that a true story about Pryor? Is that Howie Mandel told that story about Richard walking on stage and as God and asking where his son was? Is that a true story?
I don't know that story, but I have heard it and I have no reason to doubt it.
Right. Because, you know, but that's the kind of balls that we've lost. That, I mean, because when you have a guy like Richard do it like that, you do the same thing. I think there's very few, you know, I think Carvey in his own way is an artist, and there's so many guys that, like, it's okay to be an artist. Be funny, you got to be funny, but be an artist. At least set the bar somewhere,
yeah.
You know?
And it always should punch up.
Yes. God, it's so sad to watch that happen.
Punch him down. You know, you always, that's the jester part of, because it's not just one thing. You have to be good at a lot of things, and you have to know which ones they are in this game. Some people are better writers. Some people can perform, do stand up, get huge laughs, don't have no material at all. They have no material whatsoever.
Yeah, those guys are, yeah. But some of those are magical. But like when you said about punching up, it's like, it's why the jesters, why the king had a jester. Because he had one guy he had to trust that would punch him in the balls because no one else
tell
would.
The truth.
Yeah.
Tell the fucking truth.
There now, you go. That's
it might not be a fact, but it's true.
Yes.
It's my truth. And you might have different facts and whatever, but in the context of my life, in my story, this is, it's authentic.
Yeah, authentic. That's it. And I always tell people when comics ask me now, because I'm one of the, because now, I'm one of the old comics, Marsha.
Yeah, yeah.
That's fucked up. I got 40
fellow, elder statesman.
I got 40 years in. So my son started doing stand-up, you know, and I always tell young comics, I said, listen, man, the audience doesn't know if you're lying or not one-on-one. But as a group, that collective conscience can tell you're lying. Now, they're not going to call it lying. You're just not that funny. So right. if you tell the truth, you're going to add 20% to your funny just by telling the truth, and the joke will carry it the rest of the way. And my son came to me and goes, Dad, I want to be a stand-up comic. And I remember just having this fear in my stomach, like, no, you need to rethink. This is not it's not the greatest. And then I kind of helped him a little bit to storytelling like me, and he didn't have it. And my wife, who's also a comic, said, maybe he's a one-liner comic. Cause the kid was goofy as shit. When he's in fourth grade, he did this, he dressed in a gi with a buddy and they danced. They danced as midgets. They had a karate fight as midgets. And that was his class thing, his talent show thing. So the kid's been a weird kid and he's really got some good jokes. And one of his jokes is, he goes, I like conspiracy theories, so I make them up. Abe Lincoln was the first black man in whiteface. And then he backs it up.
Okay.
he goes four jokes into it and backs up that Lincoln was an undercover black man trying to save black people. It's pretty awesome.
I can see it.
Yeah, right? When the premise hit, when he said the premise, I was like, as a comic, someone comes up with a premise that was in your face and you should have thought of it. I kind of hated him for a second. I was like, man, you know, I'm your dad. I'm taking that premise. But I didn't.
Nah, I know. Now, somebody told me when I was first starting out, nobody comes to a show to hate people. Nobody. I mean, you don't pay your money, get dressed, go out to just sit there and hate people. Right. That's not what they do. So we look, we think, that, and they teach us, you got to grab them. You got to get them. And a comic like Josh Johnson said, yeah. No, you don't. Yeah. No, you just don't. And you can ease yourself into it because they're willing to go along with it. They didn't come to lead the show. They came to go. And even sometimes when they do want to participate, I don't mind hecklers. Because most of them think they're helpers.
Yes.
I mind people who verbally assault you, people who are nasty, people who threaten you, people who are just belligerent. Get them out of there. But the people who are like, well, because she was 14.
Yeah.
You know, that was a good line. Hey, this is your show.
I've done that too. I've actually dropped my knees and bowed to someone who gave me a fun line. But it's weird how, as you do comedy, like, so I got 40 years now. And the weird part is, like, isn't it interesting how in one sentence you can hear who's vicious and who's being nice? Like, who wants to take your soul and who's trying to help? You can hear it this fast. And instantly I react that way.
They see it. It's another thing. The audience sees everything you do. We think they only see what we want them to see, but they see that. They see everything you do. So by the time you walk across the stage, they've already made an impression of you. You've already told them who you are. You've communicated something. So if what comes out of your mouth don't fit that, that can either be delightful or disappointing.
Yeah. Or confused.
Can you play that? Some people have played that on purpose.
Yeah.
But they see what you do, and we think we can hide. We think we can hide behind a mic stand. We think we can hide. We think we can hide behind our glasses. And you don't realize a lot of people who do hold on to the mic have on their glasses. You know, take them off. Take them off. Put this mic stand over there. In fact, don't have a mic at all.
I use a lab for that reason.
They can see you. I learned all of that working in a round. When you work in a round, you have to work with your whole body.
Right.
You can't just work with your face or your mouth or, yeah, I'm just stand up. Because they see that too. So all of that is part of the show. So if you want to convey something to the people in front of you, have to show it to the people behind you.
Yeah.
And the stage is always moving, so you never know who that is. So you have to learn how to perform with your whole being.
Yeah, my ass is not great with punchlines either, man. I got to turn around. I have to work it. The stand-up to me is such a – I love it like breathing. And people always wonder, why do you work so hard? I'm on my 11th special now, my 11th 90-minute special. Because I don't know, man. Carlin said something years ago in an interview that really hit me in the heart. You ever hear like someone say something in an interview and it just attacks you? He said, you comics today do the same act for 8 years. I do a new hour every 18 months. And I remember, because I've been doing Norman Rockwell's Bleeding for like 6 years at the time. And I had the TV show and I remember just thinking, oh my God, I suck. And I heard my dad's voice in my head, who's already dead, say, do your fucking job. And so that's why every time I get a show done, I just dump it and move on. It's painful. I'm probably going to die a lot sooner because of the stress.
I always say, let's go back to the old days before television made you grind out material.
Yeah.
When there were bits, there were standard bits, there was, and you went to see Red Fox say, you got to wash your ass. Yeah.
Who's your favorite comic from that time?
My favorite comic, my first crush was Flip Wilson.
Oh, we used to watch, my dad and I watched it all the time. Oh, he was amazing.
I fell in love with comedy like you at three. too. That I grew up in the age of variety shows, so they were always comedians, sometimes two on three on the show. And so I knew all the comedians. The first, I think I learned how to read when I was four or five. I got a library card when I was five. And the first books I took out were joke books and cookbooks.
Wow. You know,
cooking recipe. Words. I've always loved words. So the comedians, you know, and I'm coming, we're talking the era of Buddy Hackett and those guys. And then the movies that we got to see because we didn't have all the choices we have now, you know, Danny Kaye and Red Skelton movies and all of those old classics. And you'd see the same bit. Danny Kaye had a bit about there's a nick in the pistol or the bullet. And Bob Hope did that same skit. There's a something, it wasn't the same thing, but it was the same bit. You know, comedy, we do have our greatest hit. I wish you thought of me as a singer so I could do all my own material and just start it and go, I hate skinny women. And then you finish the joke.
Yeah, but that's also the magic of us. That's also the magic of us.
What is happening now? Not in your career, with what's going on in the world. What's going on in the world? You tell me what's going on in the world and what we're supposed to do about it.
I don't know, man. Every morning I wake up and grab my phone like I'm cutting the red wire on a bomb. I look at my phone like, shit. And every single morning, and I think, and you know, it's funny, man. I keep saying this phrase to people, the tree of liberty. And I just stop right there because I think at 250 years, man, we are up. We are at that place. And for whatever reason, like we blew it. Like the voters, we blew it. We had some people on my podcast called the Election Truth Alliance, and they had gone over the data. And this election is shaky. This last election was really shaky. I mean, there's evidence that like it's the Russian tail, like in some of the swing states at 455, votes for Trump shot up like weird. Like, so the Republicans came out at the last minute.
Of course. So
it's very odd. Then they also found that there was a programming. I just read this today. And about 50% of the machines, there was a reprogramming thing to the, because they do have Wi-Fi on them. And so there's a bunch of weird stuff. So what do I think? I think you've been around a little bit longer than me, but I think we are in for worse. I think we're in for worse. We're just not there yet. And I think, I always say this to people. I go, you know, when you're going to get in a fight with somebody, you've been in a fist fight?
Heck yeah.
Okay. You know that moment before the fist fight where you're tense and you think it's going to happen and then someone pops you and you realize it's on? We are in that moment before it's on. That's where we are right now. And he's trying to punch us in the face. So I don't know. I don't know what to do. I do know this. I do know that I've done 10 specials already and whatever happens, happens. But listen, my family's been here 400 years. I made my entire living off the freedom and free speech that this country provides. And if I have to go out fighting for that, I'm cool with that.
Yeah, I have no problem with it. But I think we can't win a war as it's defined. We can't win that. We don't have that's what Trump is trying to show us. He has the military, he has the government, he has all of the weapons on it. We can't win. We've got to be either the Tiananmen Square person laying down or the woman walking to the police line, black woman walking with a flag. We've got to be that. Or we've got to be funny. These people are ridiculous. And it's our job to point that fucking shit out every day. These people are fucking ridiculous. I mean, you could just take any comedian should be able to take any headline and make a joke just by reading the fucking headline. Are you kidding me?
Just a scroll on the bottom of the screen on the news. You're right, man.
Donald Trump has called out the National Guard on peaceful protesters.
Yeah.
Donald Trump called out the National Guard on peaceful protesters. What the fuck?
There was 120 of them. That was 120. It wasn't even a lot. And then they burned down the robots. They burned down the Waymo. They burned robots. And they're like,
and they're showing the same pictures over and over again. Yeah. It's the same car. It's the same smoke bomb. Come on, people. It's not. I grew up with riots. There were riots on the news all the time when I was growing up. I know what a fucking riot looks like. I've been in riots. I know how they operate. This is not a riot.
Well, at one point, there was a whole crew doing the electric slide. I don't really think that was a riot.
No.
I mean, it was chaotic because it was white people. It was chaotic because it was white people. I will say that.
We see worse when a college football team wins.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
I've seen more cars.
I've had harsher Friday second shows, Marsha.
Okay. hangovers. What the fuck? And you guys are on the news. The tense situation. And of course, because this motherfucker brought out the National Guard for a street fight.
Right. Well, and they're carrying long rifles, too. It's like, hey, that lady's like, wearing Crocs.
Okay, there are two black kids out there fighting in the playground. All right, bring in the military. I mean, how macho can you be?
Well, at one point,
kids waving flags terrifies you.
Yeah, but this dude is the most fragile bitch I think we've ever seen. This dude, like, listen, the man,
boy.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't mean it then about you. I mean fragile. And I don't mean it in a vagina way. Pusillanimous means a coward. This dude is the biggest failure loser we've ever had. And the thing is, like, men deal with mistakes. Then, you know, I know I have to deal. I turn my mistakes into comedy. I've done like a bunch of specials. When you keep denying your mistakes in front of everybody who saw them, you are just the weakest human being. I think what's going to happen is, like, there's two ways this can go. Number one, people keep backing him up. We end up in some kind of crazy war. He's going after California because we're the fourth largest economy in the world and made him look bad.
He's got to speed it up. He's got a parade happening. He's got to speed up the takeover of the world so that the parade will be a celebration. Otherwise, it'll just be a laughing stock. So y'all got to hurry up and riot.
All right, come on, people, let's go.
Let's go. All right, more police.
This is a dude who deferred five times. He, because of his bone spurs, he couldn't march in a military parade. And he's going to have a military parade?
A birthday party. Come on. Yeah. Can you see the flyers on that?
That his wife won't go to. A birthday party that his wife won't show up for.
My parade and my birthday party. Happy birthday, American Tank. Come on, the bomb bursting in there. Anyway, I got to get my son on here. He's been waiting in the background.
Thank you so much for having me. I love Talk Comedy with the Legend. You are a legend, and you are one of my heroes. Thank you so much.
Thank you. But Stephen, my oldest son, who looks just like me, he loves comedy and comedians, and he's always itching to jump into these conversations. And I see him over here and he's like, and he's not feeling well. So we're gonna have to give him some virtual hugs and tea and stuff so he feels better. But I want you to meet my oldest son, Stephen Roberts.
Got it.
Hello. Hi.
How are you?
I'm good, how are you doing?
I'm okay.
Hi, Christopher.
Hey, Stephen, how are you?
I'm good. So I was listening to the whole conversation and she was talking about the round. Marsha, tell Christopher where you first did the round in comedy.
Where did I first do the round?
Carlin.
I did work with Carlin in the round, but I never really talked to him. I did meet him at Comic Relief and stuff like that.
Was it the circus?
But when he wanted me to open for him, I was still doing night court. And so I would have to fly in that morning or get a red eye. And then sometimes I would get off the plane, get the car to the venue, and they'd be introducing me. And I would go on stage, would do my act, and then I would leave and get back in the car. Wow. So I never saw him. And, you know, the first time that happened, I was like, oh my goodness, I didn't, I left because I was exhausted. They told me he loved it. He loved it. And so we did that for a little while.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I met him once. I got to meet him one time. We spread my father's ashes at Caesar's Palace in Tahoe. We actually dropped my father's ashes in the casino because that's where he went all the time. And and Carlin had me playing that. I had my TV show. And I asked the VIP, I said, I used whatever power I had at that time because I know how fleeting it is. And yeah. I got to sit at the stage. And the funniest thing, Carlin was still a comic at heart. We get down, it's the middle of this winter. There's all these skiers up in Tahoe at Caesars. And 5 minutes before a set, I'm laughing. I think he's killing. I don't realize behind me these skiers aren't digging how edgy he is. And he stops the show and he goes, well, I'm supposed to do 5 more minutes, but I don't like you people. Good night. And he walked off the stage. I thought it was the funniest thing I'd ever seen. And I got to meet him backstage. And I thought it was going to be an entourage. And it was him, his baseball hat, and a backpack. And that was it. I loved how pure he was about it.
Yep. He was, you know, he inherited Little David from Flip Wilson.
I got to see him live in El Paso when I lived in El Paso when I was 15. His opener is still here. And I got to open for his opener just like a few months ago.
Wow.
One Dennis? Of the many openers.
Dennis?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
Dennis Blair.
I cannot at this very moment remember his name, of course.
Who?
What an amazing thing to be anointed, Marshall, by Carlin. How'd that make you feel? Like to be like, I want Marshall Warfield to come out.
You know, by that time, I was a bit jaded. I had been anointed by Pryor.
Right.
Not just anointed. I mean, he had featured me. He had brought me on stage at the Comedy Store.
Wow.
He had, because all the comics were like, Richard, could I go on before? You know, I can't get nobody. And he was always like, yeah, okay. So he'd be scheduled to go on at 9 o'clock, be going on at 11:30 or something, because all of the, and even the headliners, you know, the heavyweights, they were, come on, Richard. And fine. So he asked me if I wanted to go on before him. Well, no, that's your set. Go ahead. So that happened a couple of times. So he went on stage this one night and I went to get a drink and we're at the Comedy Store. I went to get a drink. And as I got down the stairs to turn to go to the bar, they said, Richard's introducing you. I said, what the hell? Richard's not introducing you. Richard's introducing you. So I run back upstairs and I hear him saying, I want you to listen to this lady. She's very funny. She's going to do a few minutes and then I'll come introduce me. So I went on stage, had a killer set. And I always had that. I had that validation that you don't get. Most people don't get.
Amen.
And then I had that over and over again. You know, even as a rookie kid, when I did the Comedy Shop or something, they had a thing. And they had would have a celebrity guest introduce a new comic. And so the most unlikely fucking person on the planet chose to me, Jim Nabors.
What?
Jim Nabors. He had a TV show, the Jim Nabors Show. I did that. And so then when they asked him, he said, yes. I mean, from Red Fox, Marshall Lee, motherfucker, you know, and Sammy Davis.
Wow.
Marshall, I love him. I mean, there's so many people.
I'm incredibly envious and kind of hateful right now that you were anointed by so many legends. That's crazy to me.
Nancy Wilson said one night, she said, come on, have a drink. And we were at a function. And I said, yeah, they ain't got what I have here because it wasn't a bar or nothing. I said, I drink cognac and they don't have. She said, I know what you drink. And we went in that dressing room. She had a bottle of Courvoisier. We had a couple of
drinks. Wow.
I mean, I've been, when I quit, before I quit, I always said, if I had to quit this business tomorrow, I ain't got no kick coming. Not a single one. I have far exceeded anything I could have imagined. And that's what that Silver Shadow song, the fact, the possibility, and hopefully somebody behind me can have that dream long before I did, you know? So, no, I mean, yeah, Carlin was great, even recently. And I know I'm sounding like I'm bragging, and I am. when we did the outstanding biggest LGBTQIA show ever, backstage, and all these gay icons are coming, you know, and we're chit-chatting and talking. All of a sudden, I hear, Marshall Warfield, where have you been? And I turned around. It was Lily Tomlin.
Holy shit.
I got no kick coming in that department, you know, and then the people I count as my friends, the people who come do the show, the people, I'm grateful to have met in my life.
It's tough to be a legend.
Really given me...
I get the weight that is how hard it is to be a legend, Warfield. I'll tell you what, I got a Lily Tomlin story. So I got to see her, my manager time, I was like 19 or 20. And I got to go see her at the American Music Hall, work on Signs of Intelligent Life in the Universe. And my manager, I buy a ticket by myself. I watched her and I was watching the show. And at one point she did four characters at one point, they're all having a conversation and she's doing them all at the same time. And I was lost in it. And then I was like, holy shit, she's doing four people at one time. And I walked out of there thinking I should be a welder. I need to quit comedy now. There's never any way I'm going to get to that.
Oh, I felt that when I watched Whoopi's special. Everybody was telling me, you know, there's this new comic. She's coming after your spot. There's a black comic. Because they were like me and Shirley Hemphill. There weren't that many black comedians. And so people were like... And I'm like, I don't know who she is. I wish I was, but, you know, okay. So we didn't have the capabilities we have now, so I didn't get to see the televised special. I was always on the road. I didn't see it until it came back around a few times. And one time, I can finally see it. And I'm sitting there watching. I said, this woman is nothing like me. She's not doing anything like me. What the fuck? Did she just take a street dude to Anne Frank's house? The fuck? Man, you could have gave me that assignment, a pen, and told me to come up with a... I never would have conceived of that. I was... you know?
But you know what's great about that is that, like, to have the soul to still notice that. Like, so many people, I've met so many young comics with not a whole lot of talent that don't have that part of their soul that can watch someone be amazing and go, holy shit, I'm never going to be that. Like, when you said about this, I'm a DF student. Before I go on stage every night, I say, thank you, Lord, for this amazing opportunity. Or, Lord, God just means to me whatever the world is. I don't know. I don't believe in a God, but there's something else. So thank you for this opportunity and thanks for getting me this far, because I can't believe I'm this far. Yeah. And may they get what they're supposed to get from this.
That's all we can. And you know, I founded my own religion, the Church of Jesus.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm a member. Okay. I'm a card-carrying member of the Church of Jesus.
I believe we need that balance. We need that mothering. We need that community, family sensibility that doesn't play into the American stereotype, because I have told people over and over again, white people get stereotyped too. And the rugged white leading man in the films and in history and all that, he's usually the guy who kills the most people for the best reason.
Yes. All right, guys, here's what we're going to do.
We're going to save the world from the ant people.
Exactly.
You know, and even today I watch the trailers when you go to the movies and it's like, all right, let's kill them from the air. And we're going to put, we're crawling to the ground and we're going to kill all of it. It's just bah, bah, bah. And we don't even see the assault on our senses that needs, let's take it down a few notches. And I, both of you guys are white guys, but you know, you got to stop just getting so fucking excited about everything. Y'all get excited when you win. Y'all have riots when you win.
You know what's funny to me? Any white man that talks, that complains about he's losing his place, I'm like, man, would you shut the fuck up? Just shut up. Are you out of your mind? Any white man that's complaining needs to shut up. That's what I
have
think.
A cognac.
Cognac and relax.
And play some music and chill. Chill. I talk about him how we used to in the 60s and 70s, we smoke weed, we play music, and we just hit your cruising altitude and just chill until somebody says something profound.
No, because white people are addicted to excitement. White people
don't have to be.
No, we invent ways to, he's right. We invent ways to kill ourselves. He's absolutely right.
But you know, it's like, hey, you know, even dancing, you know, it's not that big a deal. You don't have to fight that. You just chill. What you try for everybody in America, you know, we watch the news, we sit at home, you finally get home, you turn on the TV, and you go, would y'all just fucking chill? What the hell? It ain't that serious.
Everything's a contest. Everything's a contest. We're going to talk about painting and see who has to fall off the cliff first while they're painting. I mean, it's all
cooking shows. Cooking is all about love and artistry and stuff.
Yeah.
Unless you're watching TV, then it's about, I'm going to cook this better than you. I'm going to cook it in the shortest time. I'm going to make something great, and I'm going to use it. Yeah, we're going to use mushroom straws. What the fuck?
And I'll get to the next level. I'll get to the next level.
And then I'll be the next level. And I got the crust. We're just insane, and we just want y'all to go, hey, you know, maybe we could like you. Maybe we could like each other.
Yeah, I agree with this.
You know, there was they made songs about play that fucking music, white boy. When I was coming in the 70s, with any bar you went to, a black bar, there was a band. There was all these things, and there was a white guy with a guitar trying always to sit in. Always.
Yeah.
I did the line. I said, if it wasn't for white people, who would play lead guitar? But they have made music together. People made music. Aretha Franklin's band was from the Deep South, and they're all white guys, and they made music and took it around the Motown around the world. What the fuck, man? Where did we lose that?
Yeah, I'll tell you a story. I just went to Hollywood Bowl and watched Ricky Gervais, and here's where we lost it. When you used to go to a concert, I had a charge show up my credit card because we got some food. It was like $650, and I thought I got attacked. I thought literally the Russians had hacked my credit card. And the guy goes, nah, you had a bottle of wine and some charcuterie. And I was like, I'm sorry, $650?
What did it cost to get in?
Thousands of dollars
to get in the show.
Yeah, and I actually got to the head of the Hollywood Bowl, and I think that's where we lost it. Like, it used to be a communal experience where people, it's interesting, man. It's interesting you say that. Like, so what do you think's the key, Marsha? How do we get back to it?
We gotta mother the country. And so the 92% of black women who voted correctly,
mm-hmm,
have to be listened to. The woman who should have won has to win. You want to save this country, and it's not just because she's a woman, not just because she's bright, not just because she's good at what she does, but all of those things, and she knows how to get people to cooperate and not be competitive and combative. And that's something that women bring. I read that in some scholarly paper that if we wanted, no, I think it was ChatGPT or somebody else said that we have to start letting women take leadership roles because we tend to, like I said, be more collaborative. And yep. Charlie Hill was the one who was first told me how that worked. He said, you got the wrong idea about Native people. Those are not our rules. He said, women run everything in our community. We're like, what? And all I know is the movies. I'm like, oh, yeah, but he said, no, women make all the decisions. because women give life. So how can men make decisions about life and death when they don't give life?
Yeah, I don't understand. I don't understand why. I got a question about gay men. Okay, so gay men got to deal with how disgusting.
Stephen, right to the front now. Come on,
Stephen. Asked me this. I just was joking my act. I'm like, all right. So listen, if you're a gay man, you got to deal with what gross scumbags men truly are. We're dumb, but we think we're not. We rage all the time. We the worst things in the world were invented by men, and you think we're attractive? I think that proves it's not a choice, doesn't it? You got to be attracted to that. Okay.
We have men and women in us.
I like it, man. I do a whole bit about I don't understand how people in this new show. I do the whole bit about I don't understand how people are anti-gay or anti-trans. I do this whole, so I can't do the bit now, but it's a really long bit. Yeah. And at the end of the point is like, why are people obsessed with that? I don't get it. Like, imagine being obsessed with your straight friends. Just be at dinner with, just be like, I can't look at Mike and Grace, man. I bet he puts his purple pony in her Yeti cave, man. I bet they slime and stink all over each other. I bet they use other holes. I can't stop thinking about it. Like, what is wrong with you people, man? Like, what? Quit being weird. You fucking, yeah. Like, I just don't understand the obsession with everybody else. You, when you talk about nurturing this country, that's a really good point. We have not had, and Kamala, my wife, you know, because we've been living in California our whole lives, and my wife, we've been watching Kamala for years, and my wife at one point said, she is the one person I would follow anywhere. And people forget how good she was at what she did, how it still is. But I mean, she, like when the financial crisis happened, the banks offered $2 billion on the mortgage crisis, and she went, "You guys can suck it." And they came up with $25 billion.
Yeah.
So she would have saved the country.
I hate that
we're still spirit, racist. Yeah.
That spirit that tells you, Christopher Titus, you know, I met you 50 years ago, and you have no. That's for real.
Yeah, it's a long time.
45, something like that. And you have accomplished so much. And I am just so proud of you and so gratified when you say that you were inspired in any way by me.
Yes.
I appreciate you so much.
Just so you know, you winning that competition that night, watching, being a monologist, I realized that I didn't have to juggle. I didn't have to play the guitar. I just had to be smart and funny. Thank you.
Well, thank you and congratulations. And we've gone way over past our time. And Stephen, love you. I miss your brother. I'm sure he would have had a good time with us. Skills, we don't know. That's my baby, my problem child. So we don't know where he is right now. But we miss him and love him. And then Stephen, get well. Get well soon. Thank you so much for running the show, even though you don't feel well, and staying overtime. And we don't have time to do nothing but tell the people watching, thank you for watching and coming to see us every week. If you like us, like, subscribe, whatever, you know, help us out so that we can continue to do this, which we've grown to love. And so I hope you have a wonderful week. I thank you all for being here. And I'm going to say, Marja, good night.
Bye, guys.
She got away, no one can do it like that. Her own style, no one can wear that hat. Hey, don't you know that the queen is back? She's back, she's back. She withstands the test of time. When it comes to strength, she comes to mind. Get down, she gets back.